Okay, I titled as Essentials of ADS-CFT, it's a typo, close your eye, for lattice gated theory and lattice gated theorists. And by no means this is meant to be a seminar for string theorists to audience here. I am not sure at what level I should start with. This is really a tough job. And I'll try my best, and I'm willing to go further in a separate talk or anything if you know, we all get into some specifics. So today I will try really basics, I hope, and basics in my standard may be very different from outsiders. But I'll try to not only just give this impressionistic view, but also try to give some very elementary computation, which leads to some result, probably not realistic at all from your standard. And anyway, let's start. Okay, so there's some work I did myself on some static quark potential, and then there's also concurrent independent work by Maldacena after Maldacena's conjecture. And I will start with a very wordy introduction of what gauge gravity duality really means. And this is still a debating issue in string theory itself, and the connection between gauge theory gravity has been always one of this very speculative the theme in theoretical physics, not just string theory. And in 1997, the Maldacena really revolutionized this connection in the, to my mind, the first concrete connection between gauge theory and gravity after the 1970s work by Tuft and many other people. Okay, so here is only words. If you are not satisfied with words, I will next try some figures. If I fail, then I will try to go for formulas. By then, probably I will really fail. Okay. String theory is a theory of open and closed strings. I'm sure everybody will just nod at this point. And string theory has an interesting feature in its amplitude, which is a channel duality, open string. Channel and closed strings are all related simply because it has infinite many resonances, which is not shared by any finite component field theories, local field theories. And this is one of the distinguishing features of string theory. Now, in the low energy limit of string theory, where low energy means in units of string, fundamental string scale, then open string theory, as you understand, the critical open string theory is a theory of spin one, massless spin one, which has a gauge invariance. And closed string theory, as opposed to it, is a theory of spin, massless spin two, the gravity theory. So by combining or juxtaposing the three lines, as I said so far, one might already say something about the channel duality in the low energy limit. So if I am qualified to take both low energy limit at the same time channel duality simultaneously, which is actually not true in the ordinary string, you know, good old strings, but there is some miracle associated with supersymmetry. And in this case, one can say that the open string, closed string channel duality, which means equivalence, is nothing but a low energy gauge theory, gravity theory equivalence. So this is a key in a very elementary or very heuristic, maybe it's not precisely correct, but this is a key observations which underlies the Maldacena's conjecture, which was prompted by earlier studies in the black holes from a dual point of view, dual hinio here meaning in terms of gravity or in terms of the constituent which has gauge theory dynamics in it. So this is basically gauge gravity duality. In other words, any dynamics, if you're interested in gauge theory dynamics, any dynamics associated with the gauge field can be rephrased in the language of the gravity. So the information can be extracted in either way, depending on your taste. And so far, as I will elaborate a little more, it turned out that the direction is the gauge theory is very strongly coupled in terms of Tuft coupling and has to take a large n color limit. But the gravity, corresponding gravity theory is very weakly coupled, classical gravity and very weakly curved gravity, which we think we understand very well. Any questions?
I'll start with stupid questions.
Okay.
So if you if people like us think about large M QCD, you would say that the glue wall, the pure gauge sector, is where we have closed strings, and the mesons are open string probes in that of that background.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't square at all with this picture.
Well, I will qualify a little more, and then we will come to that. Okay. Yeah.
It's very different.
That's right.
From what
yeah.
You were talking
That's
about.
Right. Yeah. 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 Okay. So here's a toolbox. So if anyone who jumps into this correspondence and try to do something, here's the basic building blocks, which is all we have in string theory, no more than this. So elementary excitations, like as an analog of the ordinary quantum field theory, the fundamental elementary excitations are open and closed strings, that's it. And in this theory, like ordinary field theory, we have solitons. And there are two classes of the solitons, which has to do with some weird feature of string interaction and the coupling constant dependence. The conventional one, which is the analog of the toothed Polyakov monopole, is what we call NS brain. And there's only one kind, which is a five-dimensional extended object living in 10 dimension. And the that NS brain is nothing but the magnetic dual or closed string. And there's also some weird soliton called it's called the name after Noble Schwarz. You don't have to know the name. Okay, just NS. Okay, and there's also another object which was actually invented in this place, Dirichlet brain. And this is not the conventional quantum, the classical soliton. Sorry?
It was invented when he was in Texas.
Okay. Oh, yeah, okay, so it's predated, that's right. It's not a classical soliton in the sense that in the weak coupling, the Compton wavelength is way, way small compared to size, classical size of the object. But it's a quantum object. So it's very weird. There's no well-defined semi-classical limit in the usual conventional soliton physics sense. But nevertheless, at weak string coupling, weak coupling constant regime, it has been well understood in terms of the conformal field theory. And that is called the D-brain. And D-brain comes in all different variety of the dimensions. Less than 10 could be 1, 2, 3, 4, and it depends on what kind of string or superstring theory you're talking about.
So you can't get D-brains by solving the classical equations of supergravity?
Well, you have to add addition. You have to consider the competition in energy between leading term and coupling constant and sub-leading term. I think the good analogy, if you are, I don't know whether this is a very good analogy. I think there is a kind of field theoretical on the analog of D brain, whether it is quantum soliton or not, which is if you consider Polyakov, the effective field theory Polyakov at the finite temperature in gauge theory, then there is a potential generator for the Polyakov loop, which is always the quantum effects, right? And therefore it has subleading, it is the term subleading in coupling constant. Now you can consider then competition, the minimizing energy configurations between classical Young-Mills keys plus the thermally generated Polyakov loop potential, and the minimum carries the coupling constant dependence, which is one higher power than the classical solitons. And this is basically Zn domain walls
well,
that we
like
talk.
A quantum induced soliton.
That's yeah.
The potential
yeah.
is quantum induced.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. The quantum induced soliton. That competes with classical kinetic terms.
So it doesn't come from, I don't know, finding the solutions of the one loop effective action or something like that?
Well, it's in a field theory point of view, that's the analog. But in string theory, we don't quite yet understand the origin of this funny, what is called Ramong-Ramong sector. But the coupling constant dependence, if you just stare at it, looks exactly like in analog of the ordinary quantum field theory, looks exactly like the one loop generated potential. So that's why we have this kind of weirdo solitons. And the third one is not any different from general relativity. It's mass principle. The space-time is generated by all these source of energy momentum tensor, open string, closed string, or D brains, NS brain. And these are basically building blocks, and you just orient and juxtaposite in a way you want. And then space-time is generated. Then holography is by using this mass principle and the open-closed duality I just talked about, namely, because space-time is generated by all these sources, And the open closed string and its solitons, whether D-brain or NS-brains, are basically source of this, the stress tensor, which in turn generates space-time. Any fluctuation of source or the solitons or string will be reflected in space-time. It's not anything foreign to string theory, just like ordinary general relativity. Okay? So this relation, the source fluctuation being reflected in gravity fluctuation, is what we in a fanciful way call holography. And we will see the more specific the situations of this one. So let me just remind very briefly what D-brains are. So D-brain is some kind of surface. At first, it's not clear whether it's dynamical or not. But as I said, there is open string and there is a closed string as well as open string. And this open string, the hypersurface that open string ends is what is called Dirichlet plane. And it's first invented by Puchinsky in Texas. And at Texas. Oh, sorry. Okay. And it turned out to be this has dynamical it carries the dynamics. It's not just a fixed surface, but it's very heavy in the weak string couplings. The mass goes like 1 over g. The reason is why it's 1 over g red as opposed to 1 over g square in ordinary, like in ordinary quantum field theory, is because, as I said, this is not classical soliton, but in a power counting coupling constant, it's the quantum soliton. And string can end on this one, and the string therefore attached to this hypersurface is a variety of open strings. And at the same time, you know, following the idea of early 70s by Chan and Payton, one can, of course, add the additional quantum numbers or representation of some vector space at the end of the string, which turned out to be turned out to correspond to label of different D-brains that string ends on. So this are dots.
In the terminology of your previous slide, what you call the source, you consider the D-brain as a source.
That's right. As, not only D-brain, but any open string or closed string, whatever it is, they are all source to the space-time, the curving the space-time. Yeah. That's right. Of course, gravity is non-linear. Gravity itself is a source of gravity.
I asked because you want to go to this holographic principle at some point.
Okay, yeah, I will.
Because of the dimension of, but you will get to that.
Right, that's right, yeah. So here, dimension of this hypersurface could be any dimension below 10. And again, like I said, I won't go in detail depending on what kind of string theory you talk about. The dimension will be selected based on some other consistency conditions of the theory. Okay, I'm sorry. Again, even though this is a quantum soliton, again, in a very weak string coupling, it's a very heavy object. It's like a wall here. So if I do only perturb the string theory, I don't really have to deal with the dynamics of this D-brain, maybe very little. But most of the time, it just serves as the hypersurface where string just ends and terminate. And it does not just terminate without much doing. One can associate certain conserved charge of the string, which is nothing but string number density or number, which just terminate at this point. Therefore, by the charge conservation of string, there should be certain flux associated with it, which pervades and localize on this D-brain. And that turned out to be the Young-Mills gauge flux on this D-brain, even though I won't go into detail. Now, if I look at the low energy of that the D-brain configuration, low energy means that any excitation on D-brain, which is localized here, is very low compared to string scale. So for example, string, if I have just one point and another point on this D-brain, and the string might stretch like this, that already causes the rest energy, the tension times the separation. If you try to kick it out, then it costs a hell of a lot of energy, which is characteristic of the string scale. So if I just excite very mildly, then string will be just like a rigid body like this, and it won't really fluctuate in ambient 10-dimensional space-time. So one can associate certain low energy degrees of freedom, which is localized on this D-brain. And for example, the infinite tension limit, this is already, as I said, it's very heavy. And then one can view this string not as a widely fluctuating dynamical entity, but very much like this rod, some kind of rigid body. So rigid body is nothing but like a point particle. So center of mass is the only degrees of freedom. And that turned out to be, because of this Chan-Payton factor, precisely corresponding to the gauge boson, which is massless. The reason why it's massless, even though it has rest energy, is because there is a still quantum fluctuation, and the quantum fluctuation generates Casimir energy, and that balances precisely the rest mass. So in low energy, the dynamics, any fluctuation on this D-brain, open string fluctuation, it turned out to be precisely usual Yang-Mill theory, now juxtaposed with the supersymmetry. And if I have n coincident D-brains of same sort, then the gauge group turned out precisely un because of Chan-Payton representations.
So the Chan-Payton index is basically going from one brain to the other brain.
That's right. That's right. That's right. N scales precisely the way you consider the pairwise connections between.
And the effect of action is sort of a little bit by the master's modes that connect one brain to the other brain.
Exactly. That's right.
The picture that should be equal. If you tilt it, then you can look at the.
Exactly. So I just looked at from the above. Right. So the black dot and white dot, you know, in general represent different the D brains.
Well, when you see this usual Yang-Mill theory, I mean, it is not a theory that is as important.
No, this is. This is a maximally supersymmetric one, and depending on dimensions, okay.
But you can never get something that is asymptotically
human. No. That's right. Okay. This is just the weak coupling limit descriptions. Okay. So the simplest variety of this sort of string is that if I have the D brain here, maybe n stack of them, then some string which start from at infinity just ends on this D brain. Of course, that has infinite length, therefore it has infinite mass. But this has a nice interpretation from D-brain point of view. This is nothing but fundamental representation. It's only one index in the representation Chan-Payton group. And therefore, this can be viewed as the fundamental representation quark, which is static, has no dynamics in it because simply it's infinite in mass. Okay? And of course, one can boost yourself or one can boost this D-brain and look at it, and that is, of course, the infinite mass quark, which moves in finite the velocity. It simply is just Lorentz boost from the rest frame. And again, as I said, has only one Chan-Payton index, therefore it's a heavy quark in the fundamental representations. Okay, good. So those I have described at the extreme weak coupling, just viewing this as a hypersurface with no dynamics whatsoever. And then now, I just, using mass principle, I just put them together in a huge number. Therefore, the source of energy momentum tensor grows large. And then I ask what happens to the neighborhood of that D-brains. So D-brain stress tensor, like I said, the mass density is order of one over G-string. That's a quantum D-brain, a quantum soliton. And if I put n of them together, clearly, the stress tensor strength is proportional to n divided by g string. Turned out that I forgot to mention this one. The Newton's constant is proportional to g string square. So if I multiply Newton's constant, which is the coupling strength between stress tensor and the metric, this times g string square turns at large n, the source of energy, source of the Einstein on the right-hand side is proportional to g string times n. And therefore, if I take G string small but n very, very large, that means the stress tensor is huge. Therefore, the space-time metric will deviate from flat one and it becomes very curved.
On the D-brain, it's still flat, right? It's the metric.
Transmit, that's right. Okay. Yeah. So I first consider it's just Lorentz boost invariant configuration like the straight one. And then I'm looking at the space transverse to it. So if I consider D3 brain, which means I have three space and one time, four-dimensional, the subspace in 10 dimension, the transverse geometry turns so the deviates so widely that it becomes into a space what is known as a five-dimensional anti-de Sitter times a five-sphere. Of course, this is 10 dimension in total. So the four-dimensional space-time here, which is parallel along D3 brain, and some radial direction has been combined in a very intricate way into five-dimensional anti-de Sitter space, and the rest of five dimension becomes five-sphere. Both of them are maximally symmetric space in given dimension, and this is very interesting, the background which has been known since early 80s in the Kluge-Klein context. Now then, like I said, by mass principle, here one can say, you know, this fence in a, the what I call in a fanciful way, the what I call the holography. If I fluctuate, if I make the source of this energy momentum tensor to fluctuate, which is nothing but four-dimensional localized fluctuation on the D-brain, then it will of course affect the 10-dimensional space-time geometry. Therefore, full 10-dimensional space-time will fluctuate, small fluctuation around, up and above this five-dimensional anti-de-Sitter times five-dimensional sphere. So for example, here's an example. I do not have time to elaborate how those one-to-one are related, and one has to look at the, you know, simply some coupling, which is nothing more than looking at point particle, the geodesic dynamics in a given curved space-time. Here one has to look at the geodesic dynamics of the D-brain in ADS5 cross S5. Turned out that, for example, if I have localized, four-dimensional localized traceless energy momentum tensor of the gauge field, turned out to be this fluctuation will change the metric in this space. Or if I look at the trace of energy momentum tensor, and then it has a dilaton, it corresponds some fluctuation of scalar mode in this 10-dimensional space-time, what is known as a dilaton. And if I look at FF tilde fluctuation in four dimension, then it gives rise to fluctuation of what is called the Ramong pseudoscalar in 10 dimensions.
Sergio, I'm a little bit confused about your terminology, the four-dimensional D-brain fluctuation, because it's the fluctuations of the string fields that give an effective action that give the Yang-Mills description. So
right.
Maybe I should read it as that the field correlators on one side are connected to field correlators at the other side by the duality. Because you seem to suggest that the fluctuations of the gauge fields cause the fluctuation, are connected to the fluctuations on the gravity side.
Right, through Einstein equation.
But the D-brain itself is a rigid construct, and it's the light modes that give an effective action, which tries to be Yang-Mills.
Yang-Mills field, which is basically excitation without changing the shape, but excitation along the brain. Also, actually, there's also small fluctuations of this,
of
the central mass. Okay, very small, but it's still massless mode.
Okay.
In fact, one can just move rigidly, adiabatically, and that does not cost any energy. So I'm just here suppressing those.
That's the center of mass.
That's right, yeah. Or relative motion even, okay? Yeah. But one can do that locally, and all those fluctuations are in one-to-one correspondence with a fluctuation in this 10-dimensional space-time, okay? Okay, so actually, one can make the story a little more interesting. One can make two different variety of the D-brains. One is, I will just use terminology which might be more understandable to audience here. The extreme zero temperature D-brain and finite temperature D-brain. Like ordinary field theory, if I consider the excitation here, one can have the zero thermal excitation configuration of D-brain, as well as a finite temperature thermal excitation of the D-brains. So zero temperature case, which is actually the lowest energy configuration of the given D-brain, turned out to be supersymmetric, as a maximally supersymmetric one. And the dynamics, the low energy dynamics on that D-brain turned out to be zero temperature, four-dimensional, N equal 4, super Yang-Mills theory. Okay? And the geometry which were made out of that when I put large numbers of these brains together is a mathematical this form. This is nothing but five-dimensional ADS space, and this is five-dimensional sphere. And this is just four-dimensional. T and X are precisely the four-dimensional coordinate parallel to the D3 brain. So this can be viewed as time and space coordinate of four-dimensional Yang-Mills theory. Okay? And this U is some radial transverse direction, and it's the multiply the two in front of this four-dimensional space-time on of the four-dimensional Yang-Mills theory in such a way U can be interpreted as four-dimensional energy scale up to numerical constant, which I will elaborate more. In particular, because energy scale I can consider from zero energy scale to infinite scale in Yang-Mills theory, U coordinate here ranges from zero to infinity. It sounds trivial, but it has an interesting implication when I consider finite temperature case. So suppose I have this theory, and excite at two finite temperature T, then the corresponding D brain turned out to be non-supersymmetric, very much like in ordinary field theory. If you turn on temperature, then the supersymmetries are all lost because of the anti-periodic boundary condition for fermions. And those finite temperature D3 brain generate now deformed space-time. Now deformation is pronounced precisely by this function f in front of the time direction as well as radial direction. If you f is 1, that's back to this one. And f is non-trivial, then this is deformed from this zero temperature case. And this function f turned out to be precisely this form. And this is what is known as a Schwarzschild harmonic function factor, which is just one higher dimensional version of a usual three-dimensional one, except now the background is anti-de Sitter space. Okay, so the here T, K is some numerical factor I won't specify further, but if, more importantly, this numerical factor right here inside this F function is proportional T to the fourth, which is nothing but Stefan Boltzmann law of the free energy of finite temperature Young-Mills theory. So the T...
The fields in the four-dimensional super Young-Mills theory are related to the coordinates of the low-energy string theory and the extra dimensions that are kicking around from the 10 dimensions. Where do the fields in the super Young-Mills theory...
Oh, very good. Okay. So in the four-dimensional super Young-Mills, as we heard in already this week, it has six scalars in adjoint representation for bosonic part, as well as usual Young-Mills field. And the six real scalar, adjoint scalar, describes the fluctuations of this D3 brain in ambient 10-dimensional space-time. So this one is a four-dimensional subspace in 10 dimension. Therefore, there are six transverse directions. So at any given point in four dimension, I can fluctuate the transverse direction, and those are the represented by the six scalars. And A mu are just excitation without breaking the translation symmetries.
Right. And the end of the UN symmetry is related to which of these D brains you're living in?
The rank of the group,
yeah,
is the number of D3 brains. Yeah, constant D3 brains.
And the effect of putting these D3 brains in is to build you this anti-de Sitter job.
That's right. Without any D3 brain, there's no source, nothing, space-time is flat.
So you start off with a flat space-time, you introduce the D brains,
that
develops you an effectively this ADS space.
That's right.
And then you interpret the fields, those extra coordinate fields, as somehow the super Young-Mills fields in the four-dimensional theory.
That's right. So this T and X are precisely the coordinate parallel to the source.
And there's a way of writing all that down.
That's right. Yeah. So of course, when I introduce only one D3 brain, it's too tiny, and therefore the space-time will literally be flat. Add one more, eventually when source becomes very significant, then space-time start to deform, and eventually the extreme and large numbers of D3 brains, it makes this kind of nice space-time. Okay. So this is the limit that we are interested in. The reason why we would like to have large number of D3 brain is simply to have very smooth and curved space-time. Otherwise, the space-time will be very highly spiked. For example, if I have only one, then literally outside is flat, and very near to the D-brain, it will curve very sharply. So therefore, usual low-energy effective derivative expansion will break down, and we don't want to have that situation because of the consistency approximation. That's why we want to have a large number of them.
Can you say once again,
why do
you have a large number of light D brains instead of one heavy?
Large numbers of light D brains instead of one heavy?
Yeah. I mean, you seem to be saying that kind of you need to curve the space time.
Right.
Large number of them. Why can't you take one of them, but you say it's made as well, a coupling three?
Okay, I'm not quite sure what the question is, but all the D brains just scale like one over G string. They are basically, energy density are basically same order, right? So I don't have an idea what the large versus heavy D brain it means. One can consider, of course, the NS brain, which scale differently with G string. And NS brain is very different, like ordinary soliton or ordinary star. As long as you have only one, already space-time is curved. So quantum D brain is very nice. This is a very fortunate thing, because if you add only one or two, space-time won't be appreciably deviated from flat space. But if you add a large number, then it begins to deform, and you have a smooth geometry like this one.
But the question is, why, suppose you just tune GS, just make GS smaller, why doesn't that compensate? Why isn't that equivalent to large N?
Oh, okay, so that's what I already gave scaling here, right? So here, this is one over G string is the strength of stress tensor for one. If I have N, this is quite large, okay? But there's, of course, some suppression factor. Newton's constant is G string square. So it goes like this. So I can consider G string very small, such that I can do perturbative string theory, while take N to infinity, such that this strength is still very large.
But that's why you need large N. Because
that's right. That's right.
So that
yeah, exactly. Okay. So then, so.
Why n equal to 4 appear and why super Young mean? Why super
smooth appear? Why n equal to 4 super Young mean rather than any lower one?
Yeah, yeah. Why n equal to 4 appear?
Oh, okay. So it's a technical thing. So the string theory has 32 super charges for closed string sector. If I introduce, the 32 comes from the following way. If I consider string has left moving, right moving, traveling wave, like freshman physics. And each of them, they are symmetric, and they give rise to 16 supersymmetry from each of them, left moving one, right moving one. And for closed string, they are independent. But if I have boundary, then the left moving wave get deflected to the right moving ones, therefore we have only standing wave, which is half of them. So that's the 16 supercharges, and turned out to be, if you organize them, then it turned out to be this n equal for super Young in full dimension.
You probably can also argue from the fact that because you start from string theory, the beta function on the field theory side should be trivial, right? It should be scaling, isn't it?
If it is only full dimension, so right, yeah, that's right, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Are you going to explain why the parameter P really is a physical temperature?
I will do later, okay. Actually, it's... Okay, but at this point, let me just flesh out one line that this Schwarzschild black hole, the temperature T is nothing but Hawking temperature, turned out to be precisely the temperature of the four-dimensional Young-Mill theory heat bath, which basically tells you that up to numerical factor, this is nothing but Stefan Boltzmann.
That's less clear because, as you pointed out, the U, the radial variable, was connected to these scalar fields.
Right.
There must be a way of connecting them. It's energy,
that's right. Yeah, good. Yeah.
So you'll get to that?
Yeah, I'll get to it later. Okay. So okay, I just want to say one more thing. Here, U was interpreted as energy scale in four dimension. Now, this scale invariant theory, this beta function is zero even at quantum level. Therefore, all scales are self similar. Now, in the finite temperature case, the U ranges from kT to infinity. In other words, there's a lower cut in the energy, of course. That's the scale set by this one. I mean, that's just mathematically just follows from this fact. F has to be positive. But this is essentially the Hawking temperature, and that's the basically heat bath temperature of the Young-Mill theory. And I will relate this to screening the mass scale by computing.
Why the temperature is smaller than U if the U starts maturity? What's the restriction?
No, this energy scale in this theory, okay, ranges between, because F has to be positive. The T has to be time, right? So this, if U is below this one, it's the interior of the black hole.
You want just inside the light cone, that's what?
Well, the outside the black hole horizon, yeah. Or alternative way of saying is that, okay, it's a technical thing. This is a Lorentzian one. I can consider like a Matsubara formulation of the finite temperature Young-Mill theory, which is Euclidean black hole in these languages. And then Euclidean black hole is a geodesically complete space only for U in this range. You don't need further space to analytically extend. Okay? Okay, maybe this physical meaning will become clearer when I compute the static Wilson loop. Anyway, so here I will first flash without much hint how the U and the radial coordinate and the scale in the Young-Mill theory problem are correlated. By no means this straight line is really mathematically precise one-to-one mapping. I just try to draw some cheap ways. There's some correspondence between scale and the radial coordinate here. So this is a some cartoon of D3 brain here. And this is a perpendicular direction in whole 10 dimension. This is a radial direction. And the radial, the radial coordinate U at zero temperature ranges from zero to infinity. And for each U value, there is a characteristic scale that can be mapped into Yang-Mill theory. That's all I want to show in this cartoon. Okay, and I will make this more precise by computing some concrete physical ones. Now, one can do some more game. In fact, there are huge plethora of games one can make because we are building blocks with D-brain and some string. You just they organize in some geometric way, any way you want, and you will turn out, you will always turn up that into some interesting some field theories with some interesting matter content. The simplest the sort of this is the following. Suppose I consider n equal 4 super Yang-Mill theory in 4 dimension, and I compactify one of the space direction on a circle, but very much like Matsubara Euclidean time direction, I just break supersymmetry along that direction. In other words, fermions take anti-symmetric, anti-periodic boundary condition. Then this theory is the losing supersymmetric completely because all the fermions get Matsubara mass. If I look at very low energy excitation, as is well known in the Yang-Mill theory context, it basically reduces Euclidean three-dimensional field theory. Okay. And this is zero temperature Euclidean field theory. So one can play that game. In fact, this was first proposed by Witten immediately. And if I look at the very low energy of the thermal S1 compactified D3 brain, then it's basically three-dimensional Yang-Mills. Of course, there are many junks, which is associated with higher harmonics along the circle direction. There are many fields, gauge field as well as a scalar field and fermions. But
why is this three-dimensional?
Look, it's a very small circle. Okay, I have only 2 plus 1 left out.
Well, yeah. In a sense, there is no small circle because theory is conformal. That's all circles in the
theory. You break the conformal.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. There's only one circle.
Yeah, just only one circle, that's right.
So, I mean, it is large or small, it makes no sense. There's no difference because it's conformal.
Yeah, sure, but I'm looking at the energy scale compared to that, whatever you first fix that scale, okay, and reference scale, I'm looking at the low energy compared to it. Okay, so if I look at the low energy, then it's a three-dimensional Yang-Mill theory with no supersymmetry whatsoever, zero temperature. Okay, now the corresponding background can be found, and it's very easy. It's almost.
So you have a sphere. This is done on a sphere S3. So you have a dimensionless quantity.
No, this is not a sphere.
Yes, it is. In S3, it's on a sphere, and then it has an extra component. And that's how it creates a dimensionless number to go to a
Okay, so here I have the time direction, and give me a freedom to do weak rotation whatever way I want. And I have one of the space direction here, and what I'm saying is that the one of those coordinate direction I can compactify with thermal boundary condition, and then I'm left with one time and two space, and one is already very small in the sense of closure Klein, or just finite temperature, Matsubara, the formulation of Yang-Mill theory. And then I'm left with 2 plus 1 dimensional gauge theory, but the supersymmetry is all gone. And now the corresponding geometry, it can be just read off from the metric I have already given you in the earlier page. And that's basically, again, five-dimensional Euclidean black hole, except now I have to reinterpret one of the space direction as Euclidean time and original time as one of the space, weak rotated space dimensions, okay? Now then global, then still, this is a space-time for a given boundary or the Yang-Mill theory or the stress tensor source. Therefore, whatever excitation spectrum I want to extract from Yang-Mill theory in 2 plus 1 can be mapped in one-to-one equivalence fashion to some spectrum or bound state spectrum of gravity excitations. So that's basically the idea. I mean, I gave already one-to-one correspondence for each gauge invariant operator to some bulk field, and they are related precisely by mass principle. So one can compute the global spectrum by looking at the bound state spectrum. Notice that the reason why the spectrum here in Yang-Mill theory, in other words, energy is related to energy in the bulk gravity is because, for example, here, this time, as I said, this is time direction of D3 brain. So the time translation generates energy in Yang-Mill theory, but this is also time from the point of view of space-time. Okay? That, I mean, actually, this is a feature because of the D brain is flat and infinitely planar.
I have a question there. In the original proposal before compactified, I guess the conjecture is that this is an exact equivalent. Is it also believed here that when you compactify some of the directions, it's still an exact equivalent, or is it an analog, or maybe approximately correct?
Well, I think it's the exact statement, except that neither this one nor compactified, we do not have any precise and rigorous proof.
But you lose conformance and everything else, but it still holds.
That's right. So that's why, I mean, so this is still, everything is conjecture, because one side you cannot really compute. Okay, right, that's right.
Correct.
This is a more radical version than just
If the original is correct, you have a one-to-one mapping of the spectrum, so the thermal
would also be one-to-one.
Yeah.
One follows from the other, right?
That's right, good, okay.
But these quadrants, you see some quadrant corrections.
Oh, these are corrections, but they're coupling.
What will be the coupling of the four-dimensional Yang-Mills theory? Is it related to some other quantity?
Oh, very good. So in this case, in the five-dimensional Euclidean black hole, you have the compactified circle. Okay, this the circle direction. And actually, I did not mention this one, but what I called it as a dilaton, dilaton value at this D3 brain location is precisely the same as the Yang-Mills coupling constant square. In other words, G-string at the brain location is G Yang-Mills square. And in this case, actually, it turned out that the dilaton is also the varying, and that means the Yang-Mills coupling is running, precisely as one should expect from 2 plus 1 dimensional sense. Okay? Because it has a classical.
In Yang-Mills theory, once you compactify one of the dimensions and shrink it down,
yeah.
Okay, you get pretty Yang-Mills. What happens exactly on the gravity side?
Okay, so Euclidean black hole, five dimensional Euclidean black hole, right, with one space direction compactified and very, very small.
Yeah.
Okay? So therefore, if I look at the long wavelength fluctuation of gravity mode, again, it looks like a four dimensional rather than ADS5.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think he showed you the horizon.
Okay, so just one comment. And the way one can visualize it is the following. So how does this work? Source and any D brain, I am given, well, not 4D, but any some D-dimensional space-time associated with the translation boost symmetry along the brain. And it may be, you know, the wrapped or just, you know, juxtaposed in very different topology. Now the corresponding space-time, it has to be such that inside it will do by whatever it is by Einstein equation. But at the boundary condition is that it should have exactly same space-time as well as a space-time topology. Suppose I have a circle one here, then the interior, this circle topology should still pervade all inside the one higher dimensional space-time. Okay?
Your fact is that the Maxwell principle, just having one blue ball that not modify the space-time so much,
right.
Why then so much modified?
Where?
You say global spectrum of general studying.
Ah, okay. This is just a small fluctuation of the gravity mode. It's not really huge deformation around this black hole background. Yeah, okay. So let me just show you, for example, spectrum. Okay. So it's basically, so for example, let's look at 0 plus with JPC 0 plus plus in 2 plus 1 and try to look at the global spectrum by solving the gravity equations. Now the JPC being 0 plus plus, as I showed earlier, couples to the dilaton rather than FF tilde, which is Ramon the pseudoscalar. So because the Fujikawa said that because this just having one excitation global will have very tiny the energy excitation, corresponding fluctuation in the background geometry will be very, very tiny. In other words, I don't have to deal with all full non-linearity of the gravity equations of motion. I only look at the linearized dilaton equation of motion in the background already generated by the presence of the D brain. So that's basically second order linear ordinary differential equation. So very simple to solve. And the space-time is now very curved. So like in a waveguide problem, you will always have some bound state, discrete spectrum, and one can compute simply by looking at this the linear second order differential equation. One can use WKB or whatever method, and the result turned out to be here. So here are one can compare with some result by Mike Tepper on a lattice, n equal 3, and he extrapolated to n equal infinity in 2 plus 1, pure Yang-Mills theory. And in the lattice unit is this one. Now in ADS-CFT, you know, calculating this the bound state spectrum, okay, one gets some number. Of course, one has to match the scale. So first we will set the lowest excited, lowest bound state to be exactly the same as this first lowest.
What's the object? What's the number mean?
Oh, this is the mass. Mass.
Oh, mass.
Yeah, mass. Sorry. Yeah.
0 plus.
This is in the lattice spacing units. Yeah. Okay, but that unit will be basically. The string tension. What am I saying? Yeah, string tension unit. Yeah. And then of course here, of course there is a one scale. One has to fit to the string tension scale or some mass scale in this problem. So first, for example, one can play the game that this first mass in the same string tension unit, measured in string tension unit, equals to whatever value one gets in the gravity psi. This is input.
The ratio is the string tension, then the scale is already dropped out in the ratio. So you probably have to set the string tension in the ABS. Mm-hmm. CFT to some value.
That's right. That's what this. That's right. Exactly. That's what I'm doing here. Right.
Are you really saying that you have a freedom to set the ratio of the square of the gap to the string tension to be whatever you want?
Well, there is the scale which is the S1 directions, which I compactify, right?
There's some ambiguity here because. The ratio in Yang-Mills 2 plus 1,
mm-hmm.
the square of the mass gap divided by the string tension should be a universal number.
Yeah.
Right, that's right, yeah.
So in other words, my understanding was is that what I know of ADS-CFT is supposed to actually give you universal quantities.
Okay, so here I have not yet, in this computation, we have not yet computed string tension independently, okay?
But there is no string tension in this scene. I know this red line.
No, I know, but there is a string tension one can compute. But at this stage, this is just the number times some cutoff scale in this problem. Cutoff scale being generated by the S1.
So this number, they're not given by the dynamics of the series. They're essentially given by the geometry of the computation.
No, that's what I'm saying. But there is overall scale in the problem, okay, in the geometry side. Okay, so one could have computed
the argument by simply saying that you're calculating ratios on both sides.
Ratios, yeah. No, not ratios.
First and the second.
Okay, one can do that, sure. Yeah, one can do that. That's right. Yeah. Here I'm not computing the string tension at all. Okay, first. One could have done that, but I'm here simply computing only the global spectrum.
You're not in the string tension.
Not here yet. Well, I could have done that. Okay? So there's at this stage a free parameter, mass scale in the problem, which is set by the circle direction. Okay?
What's the star mean there?
No, this is excited state of same quantum number.
Yeah.
So usual star.
One star means the first excited.
That's right.
Two star means
that's right, as you can see from the data.
Can I make just a general comment?
But, yeah.
But some of the older lattice people here remember the days when people did a lot of strong coupling expansions. And actually, what you really have is a kind of, my understanding is this is really a strong coupling expansion.
That's right.
So perhaps it would be more fair to ADS-CFT as well as more fair to the lattice if you compare the results of ADS-CFT, you're smiling, results of ADS-CFT with results of lattice strong coupling expansion, rather than the Monte Carlo results, which we sort of know are right.
There's a problem there if you do that because there's no universality from the strong coupling.
Yeah.
No, of course not.
No. It's a
Lorentz
invariant
cutoff
that you build in.
Yeah, but you just go to very high orders. Hopefully, you get it.
We expect it goes to continuum results, right?
Right. Sure.
Yeah.
So I have a technical question. How do they can calculate something and equal infinity?
No, it's just extrapolation of data. You should ask Mac Tepper, but as I understand it, just. 4, that's right.
Has anyone done a comparison like that?
I've done it with n again.
Do you know, Joe, do you know?
No. A strong company, I don't think so.
Looking at 20-year-old raw numbers, it's sort of like you've done something. No, but I think it's a really good analogy. I mean, it's the same kind of uncontrolled and non-neural approximation, because there are different ways to approximate QCD by ADS-CFP. So it's a real good analogy. I mean, the one sense in which it's better is it preserves more of the symmetry than the strong coupling lattice does, and so you can see more recognizable physics.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the sense in which you approximate QCD, that's pretty good.
Yeah, okay.
Well, it's really a neat question. I mean, the strong coupling expansion on the lattice is convergent. So the strong coupling expansion carries kind of a Turbidge expansion from string theory, which is an asymptotic expansion.
And it's also probably true that the strong coupling expansion at n equals infinity on the lattice has nothing to do with the continuum limit.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's what I'm worried of. Yeah.
So actually, but let me see. So if you want to give us a homework assignment, would be to solve n equals infinity script n equals 4. Supersymmetric Young Mills on the lattice. Suppose we could do that.
Oh, that's a, okay. That's different one. Okay, that's different from this one.
No, but I'm asking. I'm asking what you would want me to do in blue, so that you no longer have to say that these red numbers are an approximation to anything. I mean, it should come out 7.02. Exactly.
Well, in a conformal theory, there is no global. I mean, it's a coulombic. I mean, at least.
No, right? But you have compactified on. You put in a.
No, then
so
that.
I can solve that one. I mean, I'm not.
Yeah, that's what this one is, right?
I'm asking for, you come into the restaurant of lattice field theory.
Okay.
You make an order. So what? Yes. What is the order? So I want to get the order straight.
But if you really want to talk about testing the duality. Here's a prediction for a field theory, which is not QCD, which you could in principle.
Yeah.
Right, so I want to get exactly the definition of that field theory. Mm-hmm. So
well,
it is n equals 4 defined on S3 times S1.
No, n equal 4 compactified on a one spatial circle.
A lot of there's a lot of answers to that question. I mean, almost, there's a large number of different field
theories. Yeah, so give me that one, which gave you the 702992. Which one is that?
This is right.
This is just a pure Young Mills.
Right. This is some yeah,
no, the red.
Oh, red one.
Yeah, define the field theory.
But in terms of precise.
Young Mills theory. Yeah. Okay, that's what I'm saying.
Difficulty, right?
So
that's not a, that they wow. have. They have a precise defined candidate of
a
kosher bona fide field.
Okay, so you fixed the point n equal 4 super Young Mill, but now compact found a circle, which breaks all the supersymmetry.
Right.
And now
it's
the
defined.
Yeah, so compute it. I mean, if one can. I mean, it's just the large toothed coupling.
But do I still have to keep the rest curve?
Rest.
Not the S1.
Uh-huh.
But is there still an S3?
No. Yeah. This is just a two-dimensional planar one. Yeah, this is R3.
I can do it on R3.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, so these numbers that you're giving me would be numbers on R3 times S1?
No, R2 times S1, R 2 plus 1 dimensional flat Lorentzian space times S1. Yeah, that's right.
So Euclidean R2 times S1.
With the time also.
But there's a particular strong coupling.
Right, at the UV fixed point.
That is Lorentz invariant, which you have to translate.
No, wait. I'm in the continuum limit. I'm not asking any. Leave me the job to do the continuum limit.
But strong.
Okay.
Just tell me what you want in the continuum limit.
Okay, that's this one. So 2 plus 1 dimensional, okay. Okay, so it's a 3 plus 1 dimensional Young-Mill theory with one circle. Compactified with the thermal boundary condition.
So Euclidean, it is an R3 times
S1. That's right.
And you're not bothered. I mean, you're fine with it being flat.
Yeah, that's simplest one, in fact.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, but how does the strong
But that's something
you
should be able to do. I mean, that happen?
Yeah, it would be very nice if one can do something about.
I'm still confused because there are strong coupling. This is why these numbers deviate from what you would have continuum limit, which is like Tepper's result.
That's right.
The extrapolation of
right.
to infinity is almost. That would be the continuum results.
No, it's of different
of a different theory. Not
of,
my hypothesis
of the
QCD.
S1, you say.
No,
because it doesn't have
the six scalars, because it doesn't
have. So here's many junks, okay?
Well,
right.
Proportional to the temperature, isn't it?
Yeah, they're all proportional temperature.
Okay, so it should be large number and multiplied by the temperature, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, but okay, here's a some dirty side.
Very special limit.
Okay, right.
But I still would like to understand what the statement of strong coupling, because it's an equivalence to strong coupling QCD.
Continuum, yeah, yeah.
So we need to understand what that means.
Is it a weak coupling?
No, it's a two large toothed coupling, yeah.
Yeah, right. Toothed.
There is a free parameter, right?
Mm-hmm.
The lambda tooth, which is still free.
Lambda two, lambda QCD mean.
No.
Lambda tooth, yeah. That's right. That's right. But it has to be large.
Asymptotic in lambda goes to infinity. So when I do my lattice calculation, I have to have a free parameter.
Mm-hmm.
Lambda, I have to plot your graph as a function
good.
Of lambda. And
that's right.
Asymptotic to lambda.
And infinite n.
Then I have to get false.
That's right. That's right. This is homework.
But what happens if you have the periodic boundary condition?
No, then that's just the usual supersymmetric Young males with the. No, there's no global whatsoever. I mean, it's just. Yeah.
The
limit is very special because your coupling should be proportional to the temperature.
It's not strong
coupling.
Yeah.
How you reduce it? I mean, from
two plus one dimensional coupling is proportional to
so-called. Okay, so it's not just the usual three dimensional theory. It's something very special. Okay. Nobody tells you.
No, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm that I'm missing something.
And you coupling in
there
the
is no free parameter lambda. I mean, if there still is a free coupling constant in the continuum, which is g squared n, which can be any number I want.
It could be any number, but I mean, your three-dimensional coupling is it would be this number
times temperature.
I'm not thinking about three-dimensional. I think for me, this is a four-dimensional theory with one compactified circle.
Mm-hmm.
Which has a physical length, and if it is conformal, doesn't matter how much that is,
mm-hmm.
and then all the masses, if I, I do my simulation.
That's right.
With 100
that
is spacing in the temporal direction, measure masses.
With a fixed toothed coupling,
lattice spacing in that dimension, measure masses. It better be that if I'm conformal, that everything has scaled exactly by 2. That's all, is that correct?
That's right,
So if
it's not
so
if you conform with this boundary,
right?
If
you conform,
because you're
just
breaking
some.
No, it's a very short distance, and you'll be you'll be completion of the theory.
There is only one scale, t, the number of. So everything should scale exactly with that. Is that correct or not?
That's right. Yeah, it is.
So
you're absolutely right. I mean,
you have to think that you're talking to a computer. So you really have to.
Okay, now you have to tell them.
Yeah. You have to be very well.
Yeah.
Well, define what it is.
Yeah.
What it is. So you want me to put on the lattice the field content of n equals 4.
That's right.
I will have a gauge coupling constant.
Mm-hmm.
And I will make three directions very large. So
right, and one direction.
One of them will be kept finite and periodic.
Anti-periodic.
And I put boundary conditions on the fermions,
mm-hmm.
which are now, in this case, you want to. This is not supersymmetric preserving, so anti-periodic.
Supersymmetric all gone.
So
you
break anti-periodic. The bosons are all periodic,
mm-hmm.
and now I'm solving this model.
That's right. That's right.
Calculating the global masses,
right.
all the stars using Tepper's techniques.
Yes.
Much more complicated system.
Yeah.
And then I look at the masses and I divide them by the inverse number of lattice steps I had in the temperature direction.
Mm-hmm.
That's my pure numbers.
Right.
I plot them as a function of the lambda.
Right. And then extrapolate to?
Extrapolate
to the infinite.
And then I have to get exactly
that's right. That's right.
So it's a clear-cut, well-defined algorithm for us. We have we have to be careful how we do the fermions, but other than
that. Okay, so question.
Unless you preserve the structure, I don't think,
all bets are off. The fact it scales simply with t won't be true in a typical lattice regularized version of anything. Yeah.
No, but if you make the lattice fine enough, it's true.
Yeah.
It's our problem.
I don't know.
I don't know. Okay.
That's the whole issue, isn't it?
No, well, I think.
I mean, just because the continuum theory is finite doesn't mean when you latticize it in an arbitrary way, you'll have all the nice properties of n equals 4 cb on those. Presumably you won't, unless you're very lucky.
That's another issue. Yeah, sure. That's assumed, I think.
No, that's our problem.
Yeah.
We have to adjust.
That's right. That's why we had a talk in the earlier this week. Right? It's your job, okay?
But in principle, it's just a finite list of terms that we have to adjust. So in principle, it's a well-defined problem.
Right.
I think it's important to understand that it's well defined.
Is it
it's not, and there's nothing ambiguous here. In a big enough computer, enough people, finite computer.
Are there any of these dualities, if you dimension reduce the n equals 4 down to, say, 2 dimensions,
yes.
Are there any exact results associated with some equivalent ABS CFT?
Exact meaning like blue ball spectral, this kind of thing?
What it would be, ABS 3 process something.
Yeah, like that's right. There are.
Easier.
There are.
Easier. Because n equals 2 in 2 dimensions, we can probably do, right?
That's right. Like I said, it's basically an engineering problem. You just orient the different D brains in different directions and, you know.
It's just quantum mechanics. Just the matrix, the matrix theory. It's just quantum margin quantum mechanics. But you still have large n and a fairly large field.
Mm-hmm.
That could be done.
Yeah.
But there are predictors.
And for ABS 3, there are no gauge fields on the outside. It's just supposed to be some 2D CFT, even though
which
it's singular
don't.
CFT.
You wouldn't know what Pellis theory to do there, right? You don't know the Lagrange has very close.
That's right, yeah, right.
Okay, so there's nothing for example, two dimensional super young mills.
No, one can start with that UV as a just super young mills. I mean, just.
There is a tool for the Lagrange theory. There is.
Yeah.
N equals 8.
Yeah, D1 brain, matrix string is basically that sort. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Then any further fixed point is basically some theory we don't know what the element excitation might be. But one can start with some UV theory, which is a super young Mills.
Right, so if you take n equals 4, reduce it down to 2 dimensions, because you get n equals 8 in 2 dimensions.
Right, that's right, yeah.
There's
yeah.
a conjecture about what that maps to a particular string theory. But
yeah.
yes.
That's right, yeah.
Because that's more tractable numerically.
Okay. Yeah. I see what you mean.
Right. Lagrangian of ABS3 cross S3 cross T4, for example.
Mm-hmm.
What the Lagrangian on the dual side, many of its properties are known, but not the Lagrangian itself.
At the conformal point, but one can just look at the UV theory, which is just D1, D5, right?
That's true.
And then just look at the flow down, right?
CFT on the other side.
Yeah, so that's their job. I want us to really fine tune that to flow down to the fixed point.
But the infrared properties of three dimensional massless Yamming will control.
You mean you're worried about the infrared the divergence and so on?
Yeah.
Okay, so this computation, okay, it's not really dealing with Yang-Mill theory. So because it's getting this number, it's supposed to handle all those one in a very fancy way. Of course. You have to do that homework and then figure out how this all the infrared, the fluctuations is taken care of. And then, I mean the infrared divergences.
Infrared problem because he intentionally put the antiperiod boundary condition.
No. What I meant is a 2+1 coupling constant runs.
Massless model, right?
Yeah.
Fermionic
quantum. Oh, you mean this is scalar? They also get the mass, but mass, right? Only the gauge field remains.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
saw.
No, in fact, in 3 dimensions, I wonder. Because 4 dimensions are already marginal, right, in that sense.
Right.
Gauge field cannot have any problem.
Really?
By construction.
Okay. Well, there's a magnetic screening eventually kicking in. Yeah, that's a.
Okay, well.
Torai?
Yes, can you. For us, it's much easier to do theory.
That's what Simon was asking, like two.
Right.
So two torai. Yeah, two torai.
R to the third without forcing me to take R to infinity. Like, there was an R to the 3 times S1.
Right.
You replace that R to the 3 by a T to the 3.
Yeah.
So you have
an
extra length now because the T.
That's right. One can play all the game. That's right.
You can give me exact numbers.
No, I don't have it. I don't think anyone tried it. One can do it, in fact, yeah. Well, the problem is that one has to find the appropriate geometry.
But
that's our job.
Yeah,
right.
Do you know how to do it? I mean, do you know what will fill up the torus so that
it... But you can see what's meant in the directions, right? You don't have to twist the fermions in all the directions.
you don't have to twist the fermions in the other way.
Yeah, that's right. So it's basically, the period bound condition, that's right. Yeah.
So you're... Well,
one can do it. Right.
But just, I don't want to have to take also the limit the volume going to infinity, when I do it numerically, it's much easier.
Right.
To
give
an answer in a
fact. That's right.
If you have an exact.
That's right. Okay. Or if you spell with a sphere, okay, finite.
No.
I know that. Okay. Okay.
And it's incurable. There's a problem on the lattice. You also asked me to.
Well, actually, I think the. A sphere is, I think, is worthy of thinking, especially in the context of fuzzy spheres. Well, I don't know how to implement on a lattice for numerical simulation, but from ADS-CFT viewpoint, I mean, it's a very nice regularization. So.
I understand. I know that the torus is uglier, but it would help. But if you had the, but I didn't understand now. You say it could be done, or it has been done?
It has not been done.
Which hasn't been done?
Two circle case. As far as I know.
No, I think it's pretty. I think it's almost, you know, Luigi Kawai tells you that the large end limit can produce pretty trivially. That's true on the ADS side as well.
But what
large end limit?
So how do you? So here you have something which is a five-dimensional space. Before we start the compactifying cipher, and its boundary is space-time. Now you need something that the boundary of it would be a torus.
Right.
Four dimensions. What fills it? I mean, there is a.
Fills it as opposed to zero. It doesn't kind of fills it in one sense.
Well, what do you mean,
filling? The sense of you. I mean, that fill. I naively think about this being the boundary, and the bulk is filling up the boundary.
Oh, so it fills it is just. So ADS space has the symmetries of Minkowski space, so you can create a.
Oh, you can mod out it in all
right.
Directions.
This one here, this x direction, you can just mod out.
As long as the other.
Right.
But it can't be again a metric which has this kind of isometries. I mean, it would have the thing has to be broken into a discrete subgroup of the torus. It cannot. Right? Dx1 squared, dx2 squared. You can't be allowed to rotate dx1 into.
No, you have
to
decrease
it
right.
So what does it look like? I mean, do you know?
It's
S1 times S1 times S1, for example, here. I mean, just.
That's it?
No more than that.
That's all you need to do.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But the thing is not conformal atoms. So it doesn't have to be, once you have the duality.
No, it's so spontaneously broken only. That's it.
You can bang it.
Hello, Joe. To the best of my knowledge, if I remember, when you take ADS 5, process 5, and go to ADS 5 and give it S3 times R or times S1, if you try to make S3 into T3 and continue inside, you will encounter a singularity.
There will be a good point. Because the field theory is, as a melee, the IR is totally coupled.
And geometrically, when you just continue inside,
just think about
with a singularity. Just if you do, you answer your question, you find you end up with a singularity.
But then the answer is that you don't know well.
I don't for S3, turn S3 into T3.
Yes.
I don't know how to do it because I get singularity.
Okay, so that was the question.
Yeah,
okay, so the answer is you guys don't know.
No. Okay, so let me clarify situation. Okay, there is no.
There's a paper way of talking about the senior sedimentary helix who. Largely answer this. They show you what happens if you go inside.
But you can put a brain, or you can try and resolve the singularity.
Right.
Yeah.
It's changing.
But you know what you mean. I think
you need to doctor it. If you would just continue, you encounter a singularity.
This is your job. So you doctor it. At the end of the day, you give me numbers on T4.
Yeah.
You are capable of doing
I think. Yeah. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
That would be, I mean, that makes a huge difference for a real simulation if you have to deal with a finite system.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And for that case, actually, in this case, the black hole is actually the geometry of the horizon is a sphere in this case. But the one can consider very much like solving in the Friedman-Roberts worker cosmology for different k. One can also consider flat planar horizon also. And there has been, rather independently from all these directions, has been studied black holes with different topology of horizon. And that can be also marked up into this context with ADS. And that will precisely give you the counterpart, gravity counterpart of the toroidal Young-Mills theories. Okay, so where were we? Okay. So there's, okay, I want, basically same thing can be repeated just to show that one can do other dimensions.
Maybe here I have would have a question because, of course, in the left-hand side, this is a theory without any parameter. It's a parameterless theory, yes? I mean, okay, there is one parameter which is just the mass gap, but otherwise, there is absolutely no parameter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would guess that on the right, red column, you have some parameter, so you have to get rid of this parameter.
You mean mass scale, mass parameter?
I don't know which. I mean, as long as you don't tell it in detail, but I mean, there could be some parameters which you have to get rid of, or you can take some limit.
Okay, at the UV fixed point, all we have is the N-toothed coupling,
yes,
dimensionless one.
Okay.
And then if I compactify like this one, then we have that the mass scale set by that compactification. That's it.
Yeah, but what is then the coupling? Then you have at least one parameter, which is the coupling.
Right, the dimensionful coupling, you mean? Yeah, or running coupling, right?
Are you taking some limit of it, or?
Oh, that's right. So we are taking the UV fixed point, at the UV fixed point, which is n equal for super Young-Mills, the toothed coupling is going to infinity, very large. Okay. So if you do the simulation, that toothed coupling, whatever value, I don't know what value you get, maybe like Tepper does for the rank n, you may have to extrapolate to infinite n, an infinite toothed coupling. Yeah. Okay, maybe, how am I doing with time, by the way? Herbert, I think it's grossly.
Can you say how the radius in ADS space is related to the toothed coupling?
Ah, okay, good.
You probably said it before.
Yeah, maybe did too fast. Okay, here, this is the strength of Newton's constant times stress tensor. And this is the scale which sets the curvature of space-time. And that's the radius of ADS, as well as the sphere part. Okay? So when, as you can see, when this number is very large, then the geometry is curved very mildly over large scale. Okay? So Herbert, so what time are we doing time?
To decide for something.
Okay. So can I go on or just?
Oh, sure. Oh,
okay.
I mean, unless people.
I think it's closely interrupt, so I don't know whether it's.
Well,
I think.
Let's say think about another 15 minutes or so and find a good point.
Maybe then it just will not be able to be there. The V for 4 case again, instead of same thing that everything goes
exactly same technology, same concept, except that now the source is different dimensions.
Yeah, therefore the literally is not defined accordingly.
Yeah, it's only dimensionality which is changing.
Oh.
That's right. Yeah.
No extrapolation to any coinfinity.
Oh, there is no data because I think because it's a four dimension, you have to compete with large lattice points, and I think it's I mean this is.
Also, you have to give me the toroid coupling yet, right? Just the gravity coupling and some coupling. Say, how you define the toroid coupling instead of in terms of G string? In the very beginning we are transferring.
Oh yeah, so G string is G Young-Mills square. G Young-Mills square. Yeah. Actually, here is a little subtle. Probably I shouldn't mention this one, but the UV fixed point is not actually five-dimensional theory, but has to be something else. But that's some other discussion you don't have to really go through here. So should I go on?
Why don't you think in the next
Do you have a convenient place to stop?
Maybe, okay.
The 15 minutes or so that you would like?
Probably this is the good point to break.
Then we can
And then the rest is actually all the quark potential computation and then meson spectrum. So basically, I basically consider three the physical quantities as a kind of a setup. This is globalized sort of more or less did. And then static quark potential, and then,
right?
Yeah.
So we will see what we do about
okay. Yeah. Otherwise, I can just, you know, go through very quickly and, you know, just fly.
I think very quickly is not very much of a point, because we really want to be able to, to get it clear in our own minds.
Okay. All right. So, okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay.